Il-program li ser tisimaw uwa miġju plilkom bixuqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavalleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year.
I'm delighted to have with me today Professor Charles Savona-Ventura. Normally, I give a little potted CV of my guests, but today we're just going to talk about his present post as director of the Center for Traditional Chinese Medicine and Culture here at the university. Welcome to the program, Professor Savona-Ventura.
Thank you.
I think perhaps we ought to start off at the beginning, really. It's always a good place to start. Why was the Traditional Chinese Medicine Center set up, and why was there a need to do so?
When the idea came around, when I had accompanied director to Shanghai and Xiamen for their anniversary there. And during our discussions there, the concept of introducing traditional Chinese medicine in Malta on a professional level, one has to appreciate that traditional Chinese medicine is actually one of the registered professions in our legislation. The Council for Professions Allied to Medicine actually has a specific registers of acupuncturists. And in Malta, there was no way of training people in this role. So the idea came along, why don't we start training people, training professionals in the role of acupuncturists and other aspects of traditional Chinese medicine, because traditional Chinese medicine is wider. And we got into discussion with the Shanghai University of TCM, which was one of the leading universities in TCM in China and obviously the world. So it scores one of the highest universities in TCM. Over a number of years, we started organizing the program with the University of Shanghai, and we set up the program formally based on the Bologna process with the CTS and all that. And the program is a master's program, and so the idea would have a master's program. It has, one can say, two components. One component deals with Chinese culture, because it is generally felt that one cannot appreciate traditional Chinese medicine if you don't appreciate the way Chinese culture has developed and Chinese mentality in general. So there is a component which is where they start with Chinese culture in general, and then they go into traditional medical culture, Chinese culture, and again then they go on to the practical aspects. The teaching is basically done by people who come from Shanghai. So these are professors from the university who come to teach our students.
That's an important point.
It's a master's program. So it's a one-year program, a full-time, and we get professors from there. Obviously, certain aspects like the Chinese culture part and some aspects that relate to medical aspects that are required, like sterilization, infection control, that sort of thing, normal pain management. Those are done by local staff, by the university staff, so it's a shared program. But the larger part of the program is done by the Chinese professors who come on a regular basis, because you get different tutors coming over to give certain modules. And the students go through the usual assessments and at the end of the study unit.
You must have anticipated that there would be an interest amongst Maltese.
There was quite an interest. Unfortunately, since it's a full-time program, a number of people couldn't quite abandon their jobs. So I've had a lot of doctors and even specialists who are interested, but they can't quite, up and go their work schedule completely to join a full-time program. So there might be a role to put in a part-time program as well, eventually academic program as well. And this will create a bit of problems, management problems, because we have to get people from overseas and they have to stay here longer if it's a part-time program. But so it's something that we have to look into, because there is a lot of interest. And I'm sure that if we have it as a part-time program over a number of years, then more people will be attracted to join the program. Obviously, we also had to support the training with practical training. and the practical training is done at, again, at various levels. The students are taught, and so they practice on themselves. But we also need patients so that they see actual procedures being carried out on patients. So we've had to actually open up a clinic. So we have a clinic that provides a service to the public for various aspects of traditional Chinese medicine. As I said, traditional Chinese medicine is not just acupuncture, there's moxibustion.
Perhaps you could explain a few of these things.
Well, acupuncture is when they stick needles in you.
Yes, that's the limit of my knowledge.
And the other
really.
Thing is the what in Maltese was called the fintusi, where you get suction cups being applied. And the idea is that you cause irritation in a particular part of the body. Then there's also massage, so a certain aspect of massage to relieve pain and so on and so forth, muscle tension. But the main things that are done are basically the acupuncture and the cups. And you can also sometimes add on burning substances close to where the needles are to modify the technique. It's interesting, actually, that if you look at this cupping business, the concept of cupping is found right throughout the Mediterranean. It's more of an Islamic culture. So it's very strange how Chinese and Islamic culture actually came together. We had it in Malta. So it's something which was particularly used in Malta, this cupping business, in my youth, basically. I won't say how old I am, but up to my youth, it was still the idea of using fintusi, this cupping. And there's always a question, how does traditional Chinese medicine or any other form of folklore medicine work? How does acupuncture work with regards to pain? How does cupping work with regards to pain? How does putting in an irritant on the skin, which was another type of traditional medicine that was used locally, help for the pain? And the idea is actually that it causes counter-irritation. Counter-irritation is something that we do use in traditional medicine, in normal medicine, Western medicine. For instance, women in labor, I'm an obstetrician, part of my facets. One of the ways of dealing with pain during labor is actually to stimulate with small electrical impulses the back so that you remove the labor pains. It's called TENS. So it's something which is very standard, very well assessed. We know it works. Obviously, the pain is still there, but it's lessened. And the idea is that these techniques could very well be working by doing counter-irritation. So if you have pain somewhere, by putting in pain somewhere else, then you're going to diminish the sensation of the pain where it actually is. So there might be quite a good background to why reasons, such a scientific background. The problem is that, unfortunately, the CM methods are not always well-researched in the Western world, and the Chinese literature is not easily readable and available to the Western world. So when one looks at studies trying to assess the validity of these methods, very often one comes up with queries, question marks, rather than being definite. But if one looks at, for instance, WHO reports and the number of multivariate analysis of the literature, then one finds that, yes, there probably is a very good place for TCM methods. The problem is to identify exactly where it is useful and where it is not so useful. The important thing, basically, is that somebody does not completely rely on TCM methods. They can be used as an adjuvant to treatment. If somebody has sciatica and is in pain, and, is taking painkillers. Painkillers do have their side effects. They wreak havoc to the stomach and everything else. Now, if you can reduce your dose by using TCM, then you're not doing any harm. But, of course, one must not go to TCM if one has a serious medical disorder and simply rely on TCM. If you have a cancer, then you need to deal with cancer. TCM might be helpful in that situation when you're taking adjuvant therapy. It might decrease the nausea. TCM is useful for nausea and vomiting, but then don't we have those bands that press on your wrist that are used for against nausea and vomiting? So, there are methods, there are things that we don't understand. And I think we are academics, and we have to be open. Everything starts off as a hypothesis. Now it's a question of getting the academics to assess the hypothesis. And this is the role of having a master's, people who are professionals, who are trained in the specialty at a master's level, but also have an academic background. So that then they start to investigate. One of the requirements is that they do a thesis, so to initiate the concept of doing research on TCM on a limited level at this stage, but hopefully some people will go further. They've been offered the option of continuing their studies in Shanghai. So after they finish their master's here, they can go on and do a full doctorate course in TCM with the Shanghai University.
That's an exciting idea.
So, that's been offered by Shanghai University. You know, it's up to the students, those that are interested. Obviously, it requires sacrifices because they need to go a number of years to Shanghai. We still haven't worked out the details, but
it's a possibility. There's some potential there. So I have a friend who lived in Beijing and I know used to go for this cupping method and he swore by it and thought it was really good. And also my brother-in-law he's retired, but he was a GP in England for many years. And he was in a traditional practice in a provincial town in England. And he did a course in acupuncture. It's clearly gaining a place within the medicine, how we know it kind of thing.
I think the problem about traditional Chinese medicine is that when one looks at the reason and the whys and wherefores and how it works, it's still very much philosophical. I look at it as still at a philosophical level, where you have these channels and you alter the movements between the channels, and these channels are not anatomically sound. So it's still on the philosophical aspect. But having said that, it is a method that has a long tradition, and it works. In certain circumstances, like everything else, methods can be abused. Even in Western medicine, one can abuse certain investigations, certain methods, and overuse them and abuse them. But that does not mean that there isn't a role for it in the right situations and on the right patients, in the right circumstances. And it's important that people who practice TCM are not quacks. The people who can apply for the course are people who have a background in Western medicine. Now we've made sure that the people that we accept for the masters in TCM are actually Western health professionals. So they can be doctors, midwives, they can be nurses, physiotherapists. So they must have a background of Western medicine. So the use of TCM will be an adjuvant to their practice. So if you have a physiotherapist, then he can, apply TCM methods to his profession in physiotherapy. If you have a doctor, he can add on TCM methods to his paraphernalia of management, management options. But still with a mind, with a Western mind of identifying where TCM can be useful and where, relying simply on TCM is harmful.
Not enough.
So this is one of the requirements that we did for the course. We've had people who are not health professionals applying, very interested people in TCM, at least from their applications, but we did not want to accept people who did not have at least a primary degree in the health sciences, because we want to make sure that people who are practicing TCM in Malta are safe practitioners and they have a wider vision of what Western medicine is like, and that way they can find this right slot for TCM.
The TCM has a sort of millennial, of course, history in China and in the Far East, and I can imagine that not a lot has been produced in English or European languages about TCM, or perhaps I'm wrong, perhaps there has, but as you say, there hasn't been perhaps that looking into it from that scientific point of view. There hasn't been perhaps enough of that yet.
I think that basically, it's been Western doctors don't understand it, so they look down on it. We tend to go by evidence-based medicine. Our medicine is very much evidence-based, which is good. It's the safe way of doing things. But before we had the concept of evidence-based medicine, we had traditional medicine. You did things because the things were always done that way, and they were good, and they worked. And a lot of medicines that we use, if you look at, like, to our pharmacopoeia, a lot of the old medications were simply, we knew they worked, and they, we did not assess them as well, as rigidly as we do today. Medicine has changed. Medicine over the last 50 years has obviously changed tremendously. Looking at Western medicine, has changed tremendously, both in what is available and in the opportunities and investigative techniques, and also in attitudes towards, you know, how to assess medications and the efficacy of medications, where one tries to compare one thing with another or with placebo effect. With the CM, this is catching on as well. So there are a number of papers from China, but also in the Western world, which are increasing, and they're slowly increasing. So they are being assessed and compared to other standard medications. But the evidence is not as strong in all fields of the CM. So one can say it's still in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. But there is a bit, probably, the attitude is changing now. I mean, I remember in the late 50s, early 60s, in England, an osteopath was almost a quack, you know, considered like, but then it changed, and now every practice in England practically has...
That is because medicine fails. We still die respectful of doctors. So I think, you know, you come to a stage that you've gone to your doctor, you've got right traditional, the standard Western medicine, and, you know, if you have sciatica, just to take an example of pain, if you have sciatica, then you take medications and you're not well. You never get well. You get occasionally you're fine, but if you overstrain yourself, you're still going to get your back pain and you're still going to get your sciatic pain. So you look elsewhere. And if that elsewhere does give you some relief, you don't care how it works. Well, you don't care about the way the physiological aspect and what's happening to you. It's just a question of observing that it works. And if it works, you're going to seek it, and irrespective of what it is, whether it's the CM or massage or whatever. And this is observational. And a lot of medicine is observational. A lot of things that we do are based on observation, not necessarily based on science. Why do I prefer one medication to another? They both will work, but you have your preferences. And the preferences are because, well, patients have done well with that. Why go on to something different, which might give more side effects than the other? I've tried it. It works. Why change it? If it's not broke, you don't fix it, so to speak.
Yes, I can remember my father had this very bad back pain, and a friend of his kept telling him, I know an osteopath, but it was still something very new at that time. And he said, no, and he went here, and he took this medicine and that medicine, and nothing helped. And in the end, he said, I might as well try the osteopath. So he went there, and he really felt much better.
Now, it could be coincidence.
Never looked back.
Yeah? Because, if you have a disc prolapse, then eventually the prolapse part will shrink. So it could be simply, that time would have healed him anyway.
But could be, yes.
This is like faith healing. Why do people go for faith healing and feel better at it? Because there is a very strong psychological element in how we look at disease and how we look at pain and everything that's related to illness. I give the students an example. We talk about pain relief in labor. And tell them, well, imagine two women who are going to have the same degree of pain. So if you had to measure the amount of pain they're going to have during labor, it's going to be the same. It's going to be equal. But one woman has her husband with her. She's well supported. It's the first child of both families. So the grandparents are there waiting. They're all looking forward to this baby. And compare that to a girl who is on her own. She has no support whatsoever. She's been kicked out by the family. She's had her life turned topsy-turvy, and she can't see any future for herself. So this baby is going to upset her life. Well, their perception of the pain, their attitude towards the same pain, is going to be different. One will look at the pain positively. It's still there, but she's going to look at it positively because it's going to bring something welcome. And the other is going to look at the pain in a terrible way because it's going to bring more problems. And so our perceptions are different. And how do medications work? I always like to believe that part of the doctor is the witch doctor. And there's a shaman in all doctors. When you go to the doctor, the fact that you're going to the doctor, he goes to the procedure of examining you, then doing the investigations, and finally telling you, but there's nothing wrong with you. All your pains will disappear. Right? You might start getting tummy pains, and you start worrying because your friend or someone of the relatives had bowel cancer, and you start getting worried, and you start feeling the pains, and those pains will, the normal day-to-day pains that one gets, will start being blown out of proportion. Then you go to the doctor, he goes to the shaman puppet of examining you, and finally tells you, you're fine, there's nothing wrong with you. Say, well, all right, the pains are still there. You look at them differently. But that's not to say that, you know, certain methods do work. They might have an effect. And this is what we need to eventually, hopefully, establish. We can look at the way TCM methods actually do work in with a Western idea, with a Western mentality as well.
With the stress factor in illness, of course, is well known to actually cause illness, you have a stress factor. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Chinese approach to life, you were talking about the philosophical side, is perhaps they're very into non-stressful situations, and perhaps that's part of what it is.
This is Chinese philosophy. This is why, you know, part of the module is learning about Chinese culture, because you cannot understand Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, without understanding the background culture. And, you know, this is maybe why TCM might not work as well in a Western community, because our culture is completely different. The way we look at life, the way we look at problems in life is completely different than the way that the Chinese do. And this is even within Europe itself. I mean, the way the Northern Europeans look at life is different than the way Mediterranean look at life. I mean, you probably have had to live with the Mediterranean mentality and always against your gear.
I have half and half,
because you have half as far. So, you know, the way one looks at circumstances in life is going to be different. And this is why we felt it was important for our students to try to understand as much as possible Chinese culture, what it all implies, and how this relates to then the development of TCM, traditional Chinese medicine. And hopefully then they can understand their patients better as well.
Of course, most people know you as an obstetrician, but also...
Akushere, actually. That was the original appointment I had with government, was an akushere.
Sounds very romantic.
Exactly.
But people also know you as a historian. Have you looked into traditional Maltese medicine? Does it have anything to do with TCM kind of medicine? Is there a correlation or not?
Well, I've mentioned the fintusi, the cupping. The cupping seems to have developed from, probably we inherited this from Islamic times and during the medieval period, and then stayed on. And it's found around the Mediterranean. It's not very popular in the north, though the French have the ventouse. This is how ventouse comes from. The Maltese term ventouse comes from ventouse, which is the sucking. So there was a bit of an element in France as well, probably. And this goes on throughout. So this is something, this method alone is something that has been around millennia, being used by men throughout the ages. So there must be something positive to it. Other methods that we have a very interesting statuette from the temple period. This was a statuette that was found in Talshin, and it's a pregnant lady. So which is one of my favorite statuettes. There's another one that was found in the Hypogeum, and another one at Imnidra, three pregnant ladies. Interestingly, actually, two of them, which are whole, have 10 lines on the back, which are the 10 months of pregnancy. Everybody believes that pregnancy is 9 months, but in actual fact, pregnancy is 10 lunar months. That's 9 solar months. But they've got 10 lines on the back, so they probably were depicting the number of months that this lady had to wait until she delivered. But the one from Tarshin has actually seashells, pieces of seashells stuck into it in specific points. So there are a number of points in the front, in the axilla, under the armpits, and in the back, and where there are these small pieces of seashell stuck at various points. And, well, we don't know why are these seashells introduced that way. And Paul Kassar, who was the psychiatrist, medical historian, actually suggests that this was possibly counter-irritation, showing signs of counter-irritation, where you can actually put in irritation to treat something else. What I came up with, the idea of using an irritation somewhere to relieve pain somewhere else. Actually, I sent a copy of this model to the Chinese to see whether, you know, the points that are marked there could in any way be linked with the points that are used in obstetric patients to relieve pain, because one of the roles of acupuncture is actually to relieve pain of labor. It also helps augment and help labor get more uterine contractions but decrease the pain. So, you know, acupuncture is not usually used in pregnancies until the delivery, because it can cause contractions. So maybe our temple people actually had this model to teach where acupuncture could be used. Then obviously there are plant and uses of plants.
I was going to say herbal. We haven't spoken about the herbal side.
We don't. Really. The course does not deal with herbal because that is going into a legal field where you're using medications and that is regulated by the pharmacy board and so on. So we did not want to go into that legal minefield, basically. But, you know, a lot of herbs were always assumed traditionally to be useful for certain diseases. I remember one of my interests is diabetes. So I do diabetes in pregnancy. I was at a meeting once and the chap from Ireland came along and asked me whether we had a certain plant in Malta that could be used for diabetes. And I had no idea. So I came over and I had talked to Gianfranco. And he said, we don't have the plant that I was asking about. But then in my reading, I got the book by Borch. There's a standard book on flora of the Maltese Islands by Professor Borch, who was a medical doctor and professor of botany. And in this book, he actually mentions one plant, common plant, now it's becoming more and more common, fenugreek. Fenugreek is a herb which has a curry-like flavor. It's used in spices, and you actually can buy the seeds. You can actually grow it and use it as a salad. And he says that fenugreek is useful for management of diabetes in 1927. And this was the time when oral hypoglycemics were just coming in. Insulin had just been introduced a few years before in the early 20s, and oral hypoglycemics were just coming into the market. Well, they had syntactylin at the time. Today we know that fenugreek actually has a chemical that has metformin-like effects, which is one of the drugs that we use in medicine. So, you know, this was his aspect in the 20s was definitely observational, and now we know how it works. And this applies for a lot of other plant medications. A lot of our medications come from plants anyway. If you take aspirin, it comes from the willow tree. If you take digoxin, it comes from the foxglove, and so on and so forth. So,
fascinating area. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. I'd like to thank Professor Charles Savonaventura for coming today to talk to us about the Center for Traditional Chinese Medicine and Culture here at the University. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġu plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.